王菲非往执迷不回 Persistence and Perseverance. You're listening to Studio Plus. Time now for Career Builder. For every other week we have Career Builder, right? And joining us here online is Robert Parkinson, founder and CEO of RMG Selection, a leading Asia-focused executive search business. Today we're going to talk about what kind of softer skills and interviewer looks for in a candidate or in an interview. Hi, Robert, are you there?
Hi, Manling. Great to be with you.
Good afternoon.
And hello.
Today it is really very challenging, actually, including myself and maybe you. How to reveal the soft skill thing is much harder than the hard skill thing, because hard skill is very obvious, right?
And you can write on your piece of resume.
Yes, indeed.
So yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It is difficult. And what I find is that often the best thing to do, and I can give you some examples of this later, but there's a few takeaway pieces which, you know, for example, if someone can understand and get to grips with things like eye contact, body posture, just a few things like that, that can have a huge impact on the outcome of an interview.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, employers are all different, right?
Yeah? They are.
So as an employee or a candidate who went for a sort of a job hunt, you know, looking for a job,
yeah,
how could we understand what employers are expecting from us?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. So we actually, it's very relevant at the moment. We've just surveyed, I think, 5,000 HR professionals and hiring managers. And it was some really interesting data actually came out of the survey. The top three things that came across in terms of what people want to see during interviews were in order. The first thing, unsurprisingly, particularly in China, were the professional knowledge and skills, in other words, your experience. The second thing, which actually did surprise me a bit for China, was the communication skills. But I suppose, you know, in the context of such an international country as China is, yeah, that does become important. And the third thing was someone's educational background. Again, not a surprise. What was interesting was how, and what, you know, by comparison with where I'm from in the UK or the US or other Western countries, is second from bottom was values of the individual matching with that of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that very surprising indeed, because, you know, for example, what that means in practice is, let's say you're a deal-making company, you know, you're about making money, you know, you're a bank or something like that. You want people who are generally motivated by money, you know, who have the same values. And that, you know, across many different businesses, that is consistent. If you're an engineering company, you want people who are interested in how things are made. So I was surprised by that.
So generic sort of qualification, like the diploma, you know, communication skills, everything that you can list on a piece of paper. Besides that, we need to know, right, exactly what the employer is expecting from us. And this can be done by research?
Yeah, I think it can be done by research, but it's also important to present yourself in the right way. And we've talked on Career Builder before about FBA. It doesn't mean, for anyone who might have thought of that, first be attractive. It means feature, benefit, accomplishment. So, for example, you could say the feature of this project was to research 10,000 people. The benefit of that would be it would provide greater information for clients. The accomplishment was we surveyed 15,000 people and clients were very satisfied with that. I think it's what it's really talking about is getting to the point. FBA means really get to the point of how you're trying to present yourself. Because, you know, rather like I'm doing and rather like I'm prone to do, some people tend to waffle and talk and talk and talk at interviews rather than getting to the point, which is the key issue.
All right, so we're talking about waffling, or we're talking about, like, talking in the interview. But you can say you have teamwork skills. You can say you have communication skills, which are the second most coveted. But yeah. how do you prove it?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think it's to give an example of how someone has worked in a team and why it's worked, what the benefit has been. You know, I think the key point is to show it from, not just to explain that it happened, but again, the FBA, the feature benefit accomplishment, what is the value? Because there's only value in, for example, working a team if it, contributes to a result. In my view. So explaining former situations is a very powerful way of A, demonstrating your behavior, but also succinctly demonstrating, an example.
But when during an interview, do we always have a chance to tell the story that I used to be, very successful in the teamwork?
Mm.
Do we have the time? Usually, sometimes you're not allowed to tell a story because the time is not allowed.
Manoline, that's a really good point. I was talking to someone last night who'd just been for an interview with a law firm. And he said that the guy he was interviewing with talked for 90% of the time. So you're right, it often one doesn't get the chance. I think the answer to that is to try and set yourself up with statements which will lead to further investigation. So if you make something sound interesting, you lead the interviewer to ask you about it, to probe you about it, and almost set yourself up to, to talk about, in this case, a time when you've demonstrated teamwork. So giving the interviewer little clues and hooks to move you along.
So actually, my understanding is it's not going to be, it should never be a monologue. It should have been real interaction, right? You should not be the solo speech maker, telling your story without judging whether your interviewer would love to listen or not.
Exactly. And let me give you another takeaway thing that people listening to this program can go and use today, and that is pausing. People don't pause nearly as often as they should do. When they're speaking, in an interview situation, and leaving tiny gaps in a sentence, rather like I'm doing now, gives the other person a chance, if they want to either indicate that they understand or to contribute to the conversation. That's a real takeaway that people can use.
But the thing is that the inexperienced interviewee is really afraid of, even scared of gaps. Pauses, they never really know how to handle it. It's like the broadcasting skill. You keep reading, you feel comfortable, you dare not to pause.
Sure.
So how somebody is going to acquire this pausing skill?
Okay, that's a great question. I've got a quick answer to you. It's something we use in our business almost every week. It's called role-playing. So you grab a friend, or whoever, grab anyone who'll talk to you, and one person is the interviewer, one person is the interviewee. And when you practice in a comfortable surrounding something, in a very short space of time, a much shorter space of time than you might think, you can become comfortable with, for example, pausing in that sort of situation, or giving a self-introduction, something we've talked about before. But practice is the key. But I think people have this belief, which is wrong, that it takes, years and years and years and years of practice to do
this. We'll be back soon.
No problem.
Studio Plus, a feast of news, culture, and views.
All right, let's go.
Tune in to meet some fascinating people, share their stories.
China is one of the great creative countries.
Old Beijing style.
Exclusively Chinese musicals.
Studio Plus, something fresh.
Then add in your mushrooms.
Something fun. Something more. Studio Plus.
Yes, you're listening to Studio Plus. We are in the midst of a conversation with Robert Parkinson, founder and CEO of RMG Selection, a leading Asia-focused executive search business. And we are just now talking about how to present your soft skills rather than your hard skills to your employer. And previously we were talking about real interaction. Do not go into a monologue. You know, keep on talking about yourself, right? Try to interact with, and try to find out what they actually really want to hear from you. And we talked about pausing, which is rarely being realized by all interviewees, that we need to learn to pause during, you know, our conversation. Right? Let's continue, Robert.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's very powerful. I was just explaining that role-playing and practicing with someone else is a great way to accomplish the skills of someone who, you know, has got 10 years' experience in a very short space of time. Mm-hmm. So you can be good at this quickly, is the takeaway point that I would make. Just going back to our survey, the Recruitment Insider, there was lots of other things that you know, were interesting. I was struck by how the values of the person and the company were so low on the surveyed people's order of preference. And if you were to ask in the West, the values point would be much higher. So that was interesting. What was also interesting, just to come back to the survey, was that certificate, although education was priority number three, certificates and courses and professional training and you know, these day sort of courses people go on was the least valued thing there. Which was fascinating for me in terms of what people are looking for at interviews.
But our experiences tell us that sometimes the ability and the education, you know, these things you can still require, you know, acquire after being recruited. Don't you think so?
I think that is very true. But I think if we look at the difference between Western countries and China is there is a propensity, I think, to really focus too much on hiring skill rather than hiring ability. You know, in the West, in HR, we talk about trainability,
mm-hmm.
And we don't want to sacrifice trainability. In other words, someone's ability to learn or be trained, but we do want, we might choose to sacrifice a little bit of experience. So there's an interesting contrast there.
There's a huge room to improve, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think people who are more trainable, they're more likely to have loyalty to a company as opposed to people who are already very experienced?
Yes, I do. I think that's a great question. I do think that training is a way of showing someone that the company is interested in investing in them. And that it kind of implicitly creates a stickiness between the employer and employee. Whereas you know, for example, I my personal area of expertise is recruiting lawyers, and you have a lot of lawyers who jump around from firm to firm to firm, and there's a very, very low level of what we would call stickiness because there is no training, there is no development. It just becomes really a bidding war. It becomes about money. You know, who can pay the highest price.
It can be compared to the way we are sticking to our mentor. You know, we are grateful, right? Because the mentor helped us to grow. Definitely, that's a very, very good question. But Robert, we are talking about HR and hiring manager. Don't you think they are the same bunch of people, or they are just different? So,
well, that's an interesting point. Actually, in our survey, the Recruitment Insider, some things were the same. One of the key point that was the same was the number one value, which was experience, professional knowledge, and skill. But there were certain things that hiring managers, line managers valued more than HR. Professional training, unsurprisingly, was valued very highly. The least valued point by line managers, hiring managers, was value alignment with the company. Unsurprisingly, I suppose, because generally speaking, line managers are not educated enough by their HR departments about, you know, the value of values, as it were. But generally speaking, we found the same kind of trends. The other point, of course, where line managers varied a little bit compared to HR was clients, client focus. So they found that to be much more important for them. And the other interesting point was they really wanted team players, whereas strangely HR people didn't seem to want team players enough as much as line managers. So it was an interesting and varied snapshot.
They are different people because their responsibilities are different, right?
Exactly, yeah. They think in different ways. Their DNA is different.
But do they share this knowledge? You know, they can improve. They should hear frequently from the line managers,
you know,
right?
I think one of my personal views is that particularly in China, human resources is too often perceived within companies as a kind of supporting function, as an administrative function. Well, in fact, it's not. It's a business function. You know, if you have really good, credible HR people running your business, mm-hmm. they can make and save you money. They can have a tremendous impact on the happiness, therefore the stickiness of your staff, therefore how much you have to pay your staff. You know, there's a huge, hugely important function, and I think that it needs to, the perceptions need to change, and that has to come from the top of companies.
The real communication should occur, actually, between HR and the line, you know, a particular department. For example, it's always the case that HR recruited people whom they think are the best, but, you know, the line managers think, oh, you know, it's not the people that we want.
Yeah, I mean, that is true, and the other point I would make is that line managers are responsible for recruitment. They say, you know, it's, no, HR does the recruitment. No, they don't, or they certainly shouldn't. They facilitate their recruitment. They enable recruitment through whatever means, advertising, recruiters, headhunters, whatever it happens to be. But the line manager, or the business unit manager, is the person who is going to be hiring the staff member, mm-hmm. and therefore needs to take ownership of that process.
So they should be involved.
All right. Exactly.
All right.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Robert Parkinson. We learned a lot about the soft power skills. And happy April Fool's Day.
Mm.
Yes.
Indeed.
Thank you very much.
All the best.
All right.
All right, you're listening to Studio Plus.
Our next song is going to be Stay Out by Nina Nesbitt.